Hi, this is Cal Petty, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
Victims of psychos, victims of life. Victims are
720 WGN on the road with Dane live here in Chicago. Beautiful day, a beautiful day for it's going to be a great weekend for racing. And there's no better place to see a race than a place just a couple short hours, but a world away from us here in Chicago. It is Road America, America's national park of speed. On the line is the man behind so much of the messaging and communications up there with the story to tell. John Everett, welcome to WGN.
Hey, thanks, Dane. Really happy to be on here with you with On the Road with Dane. Can't thank you enough for having us on today.
Well, it's Road America, right? You guys have the stars of the NASCAR Infinity Series up there with you. When it comes to road courses, it's also terrifying a little bit for the drivers, right? It's one of those courses that they see as the challenge. They love the setting, though. We've talked with, you know, when the drivers were out in Sonoma, Watkins Glen, and now they're here in your backyard. So how has it been as everybody's kind of done their practices and prepared for the race?
Yeah, we just got through the first practice of NASCAR Xfinity, and a lot of guys are real excited. The track is coming together really well, a lot of definite traction in a lot of the turns. One of the things that's unique about Road America as opposed to other road courses that they go on is that it's 4 miles. 4 miles and 14 turns as opposed to Mid-Ohio or even Watkins Glen, which are right around, you know, 2.5, maybe 2 miles. So a lot of these guys, they get through several turns. And they think, hey, you know what, I've only got a few more to go, but actually they got another almost 2 miles to go. So we just got done with practice. A lot of guys are enjoying it, having a lot of fun. The weather is actually holding off really, really well for us. We got a little bit of cloud cover, but no rain, and that allows for a lot of good horsepower, a lot of good speed out of these cars. Brendan Gaunless coming here. Austin Cindric is making his debut here. We've got a lot of great talent from Richard Childress Racing, Penske Racing, Stuart Haas, also Ganassi. So a lot of these guys are really looking to cut their teeth on a road course and make their name, build their resume so they can move up to the Cup Series.
You know, these are some of the best drivers in the world, so they've got to get out there and do it and be it. But the course is, and you mentioned it, so unique, right? Not only is it a road course that they don't see more than not every day, but then also it's so unique within the world of road courses. Do you have any kind of, I don't want to say education, but like tips? Do you get up there and say like, well, here's some things you need to know, you know, just things that they may not necessarily think about it, or the teams, because these are younger drivers, do they just fill them in on their intel they've had over the years?
What's surprising is that a lot of the younger drivers like Josh Bilicki, who's local, and then also Nick Hammond, and then even Justin Allgaier, who's ran Cup before, these guys have actually done a lot on simulators and a lot on iRacing. And that's given them a lot of depth perception about being able to find breaking points and being able to set their marks as far as turns and apexes. So it's really helped out those younger guys. Surprisingly enough, if you're a good video gamer, it's helped out for a lot of these younger NASCAR guys. Now, the veteran guys like Elliott, you know, Sadler and Brendan Gaughan and other guys, they're just good dyed-in-the-wool road course guys. So they love to get out here and just sort of mix it up. It's important to know the rain line from the dry line, and it's important to know your apexes because it's definitely something different from running Cup or running Xfinity on an oval is that these guys, we do run in the rain. So if they have to go to rain tires or run windshield wipers, it's a different experience for a lot of these guys. The ones that have had that actually fare a little bit better in the rain.
See, that is so cool. So you get to see, if you love racing, if you love stock car racing, NASCAR, to be able to see them in a totally different and potentially really exciting and different environment, that's really cool. I wanted to get your thoughts on this because you really hit on it. You look at how different, you know, over the last maybe 20 years, football has become, where they've got, you know, access to all of the videotape and everything as opposed to, you know, pictures or still photos or some of the things that they used to work on in the race world. You're seeing and now they've changed some of the rules to where for the Infinity races and for the truck races, you know, a lot of the more experienced bigger names aren't allowed to race as many of the races, so they're counting on a lot of these young drivers not only being great but being great stars sooner rather than later. And you are seeing guys who are almost able to, I don't want to say like build up a resume, but certainly build up, you know, what it is that they're capable of doing so much because of the video games, because of the simulators. They have become so real that it really, I mean, it's incredibly valuable for them.
Certainly. It's something that It fares better with a lot of the rules changes. It fares better for some of your young guys because they're able to, definitely accept contracts that probably aren't as lucrative to really be able to go out there and prove themselves. A lot of Cup teams and a lot of Xfinity teams are looking at new and upcoming drivers. At the same point in time, they're willing to put the technology, they're willing to put a driver on a simulator and do some tests first and then put them in a car to actually see how well they're able to set up the car, work with the car, work with the brakes, work with the tires, the suspension guys, things like that, and be able to get comfortable in the car. So it's an interesting progression. Back in the day, you used to have guys that started in karting and worked their way up. And you know, there is that element, too, in sports cars and whatnot. But now you have a lot more guys that have actually been doing a lot more simulator, a lot more iRacing, and then stepping into a Cup car or an Xfinity car and doing fairly well. So some new and interesting and unique names in the field, obviously, but also some veteran talent as well. So it's going to be an exciting race, and especially exciting when you throw in a little bit of weather along with it, because that truly separates the good drivers from the great drivers.
Yes, absolutely. Well, regardless of how much experience they're getting from the simulators, and you know there's some value there, there's no substitute for experiencing it as a driver or as a fan in person. And it's everybody that's listening right now has the opportunity, hopefully, and as long as tickets are available after this, but has the ability to get up there and see all of this action we've been talking about live and in person. So, John, give people information about, you know, how they can get tickets, how they can get up there and see the 180, the Johnsonville 180 with you.
Lots of really great options to see the Johnsonville 180. The green flag drops at 2 o'clock Central Time. RoadAmerica.com, you can print your tickets at home, come through the gate, scan them right through. You can also purchase them all the way up until the green flag drops and come through the gate. Something that's interesting, and you can buy them at the gate. Something that's interesting for fans, anyone 16 years and under gets in free at the gate with a paying adult.
Wow.
So it's a perfect family savings. Mom and dad get in and they can bring the whole family and their kids get in free 16 and under at the gate. So it's a wonderful experience if you're looking for something to do on a Sunday to come up and watch some great NASCAR Xfinity racing for the Johnsonville 180.
Yeah, and it's second to none, too, to be able to see it in that beautiful environment. So many of the tracks that we have, it's a big piece of concrete with a track built in the middle. There's nothing wrong with that. But to see it in the middle of really, you know, some of the best, forests in America right up there, have it happening all around you for 4 miles, I think is incredible. So roadamerica.com for tickets, correct?
RoadAmerica.com or 800-365-RACE. You can also get them at the gate all the way up until the green flag drops.
John Everett, thanks so much. I know you got a lot of work to do, but thanks for taking time out and sharing with the listeners today.
Guys, we're having a good time. Definitely get on up here while you can. If not, you can tune in on NBC as well and actually see Road America and all its beauty. We're excited for this event. Can't thank you guys, Dane, with On the Road with Dane enough and WGN. You guys do a wonderful job down there, and we look forward to doing more with you in the future.
Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. We're going
to... I just want to tell you right now that...
Hi, this is Stephanie Izard, and you're On the Road with Dane on WGN.
I really do believe that something's got a hold on me here.
720 WGN On the Road with Dane here live. Allstate Showcase Studio. Beautiful day. Lots of people out and about enjoying the day, enjoying Chicago. 312-981-7200. You can share your first car, favorite car, dream car that you would like to enjoy. And we've got a $25 Bona Beef gift card. Some great ones coming in already. Some Mustangs and a couple Corvettes and some other stuff. You can call and give it to Lise. You can text it in. You can even email it in at ontheroadwithdane@gmail and send your car, and we'll announce the winner before the end of the program. Well, what you want to do is you want to be a winner in life, and I know sometimes we kind of broaden the range of topics here on the road. We talk about some family road trips, some transformative travel. Certainly we talk a lot of cars and some racing as well. And now it's that journey through life we are all taking, and how to be the best, most confident, most successful, most fulfilled, or at least improve upon what it is that we're doing through that life and through that process. In studio with us, we've got Brad Finkeldye. He is an inspirational speaker. He's a motivational speaker. He's an author. He's going to help us on our journey to be our best. Brad, welcome to WGN.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, yeah, and I appreciate you being here. Well, this is really great because there are so many things out there that people want to do. And I think that universally people want to be happy, right? They want to be fulfilled. They want to achieve some of their goals and some of their dreams. But it seems like that those simple things that everybody agrees on can sometimes be the hardest code to crack, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about you and your story about how you were at a point probably a lot of us have been, you know, where we needed to make a change, make a difference, wanted to accomplish things, but something inside of us was stopping us.
Yeah. So I was living in, this is about 4 years ago, in Austin, Texas. And I'm a nerd, a geek, and I was in the IT, you know, arena for a long time. And I had just come to a point where I had bought a big house. I had the BMW. I had all the things and stuff that's supposed to make you, quote unquote, happy as, you know, as an American or...
Is that it? Is there like a newsletter that comes out? It's like the happiness like to-do list where you says, okay, you got to do this and this. But there are some things, right, traditionally that people kind of go for as goals.
Usually success in the quote of like money.
Okay.
You know? And I had gone after that and I just looked down at my house. Like I had a really nice house. I had an atrium level and I looked down at my kitchen and it just was like, I'm not happy. And I had just seen this documentary called The Happy Movie. And it goes into the science of happiness. And I was like, I think I've been chasing the wrong thing. I've been chasing money. And maybe that's why I'm not happy.
Maybe the idea is, because it's hard for a lot of listeners to hear, like, you know, hey, I've got this really giant house. I've got all this money, but I'm not happy. Where wouldn't it be good to maybe try to find a way to get along with your money? Like, be happy with it. maybe some marriage counseling between you and your money.
Yeah, yeah. And... That's a whole other ballgame, your actual relationship with money and the way that you deal with it, the way that you view it or avoid it or not want to manage it or not. Like if you got a pile of it, it's great. But if it starts to go away, then some other fears can, you know, like come up.
Well, whatever it happens to be and with you and we've heard that story a lot of times where people think like they go towards things they think will make them happy once. They finally get there. They realize, hey, wow, you know, I'm not any happier than I was.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that. So you're there in your house. It's very nice. And you realize you need something different.
Yeah. And so I reached out to a life coach. And it was my first experience of like being coached by someone.
Is that like Tony Robbins? He's like he's an example people can relate to. Is it?
Yeah, kind of.
Less
in that
big
realm.
And yelly. And...
Yeah. Less 6'7" giant man, more small woman, still powerful.
Okay. Gotcha.
And so what happened was we had a conversation and at the end of this about 2 hour conversation, she looked me in the eyes and she said, "You're not confident, man. You're trying to buy your confidence with a big paycheck and trying to impress people with your stuff." And it was like the first time someone told me the truth of who I was.
Was that something you were aware of?
No.
Or did you feel confident? Were you like, really?
Yeah. Well, I kind of, now that I look back at it, it was a way to get people to like me. And when she said that, it was like a truth punch, you know, just like right to the face and gut. And that really launched me into really thinking about like, wow, like, I really don't want to be stuck behind the cubicle the rest of my life. I want to go out and travel. I want to make a difference. I want to, you know, be with people instead of being behind the computer all day doing my nerd thing. And so that launched me into the whole idea of like, okay, what would it actually look like to leave? And then I set a goal and an intention.
Because some of it is, you know, it's one thing to go after goals that you think are going to make you happy. You realize they don't. So, you know, you got to go in a different direction. But then there's a lot of times, because many of those things are common sense security things. You've got to leave the security of a good job or a house or family or whatever it is that you've got, that you've got to leave them behind. It can be scary. That can be even more scary, right, than realizing you need to make a change.
Yeah, that can be, you know, realizing, like for me, I had to take that hard look. Of like, okay, what do I really want to do and what's really at risk? And for me, I didn't have kids and I didn't have a wife. So I was like, well, there's really nothing except for money at risk. And that might be a big thing for a lot of people. But for me, I had already had all the things and gotten all the stuff. And I'm like, I'm really not experiencing what I want. And so that launched me into doing what I really was doing on the side for a long
time. Did you know? Okay, so you understood. You knew that you weren't fulfilled by the things you wanted. You knew you needed to do something else. Did it take a life coach to – she had to tell you, hey, well, here's one of the things. You need to get more confident, obviously, if you're going to want to be able to go towards things. Were you – did you know what you want? I mean, because some people have like a dream or something that they really always wanted to do, and it's just – it's kind of pushed aside based on maybe they're not confident to believe that either they deserve that or that they can really achieve that. You know, and a lot of people say, you know, positive thinking, you can just follow your passions. You won't be happy if you don't. Did you know what you wanted to do? You knew you wanted to travel.
I knew in the time that I wanted to travel and I wanted to make a difference. And I thought that was in the realm of photography. And so I actually went out and did that for a little bit, got an international gig and did a great job down in Guatemala and came back. And then eventually that Christmas, I went back to my mom's house and I realized something that I'd wanted to do for a long time, but I never had the guts to do it. And so my whole journey has been about me stepping into fears and doing things that I've been scared of. And my dad passed away in 1997 and my mom's house just fell apart. And I had always,
literally or just like
just disarray. Yeah. Okay, and like gotcha. Things just didn't get fixed. And, you know, just the sad story of like, you know, someone's, you know, spouse who passed away and they don't do anything. And then things start breaking and the more things start breaking. And, you know, I went back there and, you know, I was, you know, it's like, I'm going to go fix this. I want to. I've got the time. I've got the resources. And so I moved back in with my mom for 9 months and I completely rehabbed her basement and I gave her a home for her 70th birthday that she could be proud of again, that she could have her grandkids there and that she could have her family over and not feel embarrassed just to have a family gathering. And so that was like, and I did most of this by just watching YouTube videos and really nagging my brothers to come out and help.
Well, they're genetically obligated to support you in these efforts, I think, right?
Most families, I think that's true. Some families, right. I don't think they get that, but yeah. So that really launched me into like, oh, wow, I just stepped into a huge fear of doing something that I was scared of. And it
what
really
you were scared
me-
of. And I know this is kind of crazy. We all have a lot of projects that we haven't finished. Hello. But is home improvement one of those things that people are scared of? I didn't know that.
Well, I think here's what it was for me. It was finishing a project I said I wanted to start and finish. Oh, it was stepping inside of commitment. That was my big fear. Commitment.
So
really finishing something.
So we're going to kind of tease what we're going to talk about after the break. So you decided at some point, mm-hmm. you know, once you had kind of harnessed all of those things and you decided that you were kind of making some headway as far as trying to be not only a happier person, more productive person, more fulfilled person, regardless of what it is that you want to do, whether it's go, you know, travel the world, take pictures, fix your mom's house, right? Is that you decided to get into this role, just like your life coach that was nothing like Tony Robbins, but still very helpful, is that you decided to start trying to help people, whether it was through motivational speaking, whether it's through some of the books, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. We've got Brad Finkeldye in studio. He is one of those guys that has been walking the walk on the journey through life, kind of living it, trying to become a better, more fulfilled, more well-rounded and complete person. And he's going to try to help you do the same here as we all kind of take that road trip through life. So stay tuned for that. It's On the Road with Dane. We'll come back right after this at 720 WG.
Hi, this is IndyCar driver Graham Rahal, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN on the road with Dane here live, Allstate Showcase Studio. And life is a journey. We all want to make the best of it, right? And be the best person, people that we can be, not only for ourselves, but our family. As we go through life in studio, we've got Brad Finkeldye. He is an inspirational speaker. He's a guy who's lived it, right? He's come to terms. He didn't just go to school for this. He came to terms with things he was working on dealing with. He made those important changes, and then he got to the point where he is looking to share as well. So great to have you back in studio. 312-981-7200. If you have any questions, you can definitely text them in. You can call in. Maybe we'll get you in here with Brad as well. So Brad, let's talk about it. You got to the point where you're starting to do things that you had put off or hadn't done. You kind of made some important steps, and even some of those little ones, if you've got sort of a mental block, you know, that's stopping you. It could be the most mundane thing people couldn't necessarily relate to, but it could be almost impossible to you if you're wired that way, right?
Yeah. It could definitely be like, usually whatever stops us is usually, you know, procrastination, and under procrastination is a fear of something. The fear of you're going to make something mean, or something's going to happen if you do this, or something's not going to happen, you know, and it shuts us down in our bodies. And when we can get present and like, just really like think about what's actually underneath all of that procrastination, then you can have the real thing to talk about.
Okay. So you did this and you get to a point, not everybody gets there. You know, mm-hmm. everybody's trying to kind of make their way through this crazy world. Not everybody gets to the point where they're like, you know what? I see that this has been valuable for me. I'd like to share it. So let's talk about how you got to the point where you're going to be, you know, talking to people, motivating people, sharing people. Obviously we're doing that here on the show today, and you know, not everybody has a book in them. So talk a little bit about that journey from fixing you to helping other people fix themselves.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have a book in them. I think everybody's got a story that they can share too. And my story, you know, my catalyst moment happened when I was living in Portland, Oregon, and I was out walking my dog one day, and I saw this guy pushing a bicycle, And what happened was I saw an Amazon package that I had ordered, you know, something. And it was really special for me. And when I got back to my house, I looked at my phone and I realized that it was literally just dropped off, but the package wasn't at my house. And so what I realized is that the guy that I just walked past
pretended to be you?
No, yeah, he stole my package.
No, that sucks. Yeah.
And so, but to back it up a little bit, you know, the year before this moment, I was down in Ecuador on a speaking trip. And one of the guys that was with us was a shaman, and he was a speaker too. And he carried around a giant rubber chicken. And he just empowered people to quit being chickens in their life and to really stand up for what they believe. And to
so there's a shaman with a rubber chicken?
Yeah.
Because you never know, right, what'll be that icebreaker. I think that a lot of inroads can be made through humor, and I guess that's...
That was his thing.
Okay.
And so he gave me one, and we had a really interesting conversation where I left felt empowered and inspired about who I could be. And just one of those people in life where you feel like, that guy made me feel really good about who I am and what I could do. And so about a year later, he was killed in a terrorist attack. And so I had decided to take on his message of inspiring and empowering other people. And so what I did is I ordered 100 little tiny rubber chickens to start giving away to people.
Yes.
And I know it's ridiculous, but it's what it's
well, like, at least you've acknowledged that, though, right?
Yes, it is ridiculous. But this little tiny rubber chicken was just a reminder in my life. Every time I saw it, I was like, oh, now I got to do that thing I'm afraid to do, but I really want to do it. And it just kept me stepping in and stepping in and stepping into more and more fears. And I kept having breakthroughs in my confidence. And so that day that that guy stole my package, I was confronted with all this fear because I've hated confrontation my whole life. Like, I've always run from it. And so he showed, like, he stole my package. And I'm sitting there going, oh, man, I got to go chase this guy down for some rubber chickens. This is ridiculous. Because he stole my package and I was taking the, you know, this guy was killed in a terrorist attack. It was my time to stand up for myself. So my heart was beating, my, you know, lungs, everything was just like all the adrenaline was pumping.
Could have been a misunderstanding or a mistake.
It
wasn't.
No, okay. Like it was too right on the point. Like I just passed him. I just got looked at my phone. It was right. Literally just dropped off. I'm like, this guy stole my package. And he didn't look like the UPS guy.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
All right.
And so I grabbed my dog for protection, which probably would have just been an attack licking at that point. And so I chase this guy down and I confront him and I'm like, hey, you got my package? And he's like, no, I don't. And I look and it's got my name on it. And I'm like, dude,
that's usually a good sign.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, this is mine. And I realized, like, in the moment, you know, something wasn't right that was going on with him. And at the same time, I like opened up the package because I was still excited, like a little kid on Christmas Day. And I opened it up and I was expecting 100 of these that I paid $30 for. And these are like 1-inch little tiny pieces of plastic. And I got one. And I was like, I just got double ripped off. I got ripped off from the Amazon person and ripped off, you know, from this guy. And then I looked at the guy and I took all of the coaching that I had. I had become a life coach by this point and been certified and everything. And I looked at him and I said, what's going on in your life, man? Like, why are you stealing random packages?
Why are you stealing my rubber chickens?
Yeah, why are you stealing stuff? And he just like, he could tell I cared and was genuine in the moment and wasn't treating him like another homeless guy because I found out he was homeless. And he just shared that 4 people had died in his life that year, that he was strung out on drugs, his mom was on drugs, and his girlfriend was on drugs. And he just opened up and like shared his life and what it was like to be him a little bit. And I was like, I really felt for the guy. I was like, I would probably steal stuff too at that point if all this stuff had happened to me. And so I reached in my wallet, gave him the last $6 I had on me and my business card and said, dude, give me a call. Like, I'd be happy to coach you and sit down a coffee and see if I could get you moving in the right direction, whatever I can do.
Wow.
And that was the moment I got my confidence back. And that's the big catalyst moment where I started realizing like, wow, like when I shut up and I listen to people authentically, I can actually make a difference. Because I'm there for them to hear whatever they're going through.
It's interesting to hear, too, that you're helping a person who's in a position that maybe doesn't, like on paper, deserve help from you, right? They're busy stealing your chickens.
Yeah.
You know, that's the last person that you'd think that you'd be like, well, I need to help this guy. But I think it's very cool. I think it's very big. And if that was one of those things where you're able to cross that barrier and in that situation and in instance, be able to be the coach that you already were and were becoming. So we've only got like, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes left here, but give information about what it is that people can do in order to maybe some steps that they can do or ways that people can get a hold of you, and you can kind of give them. Of course, they'll have to sign that waiver that they'll promise not to steal any of your mail, but how they can get involved and start kind of turning things around into that direction.
Yeah. So I've written two books by now, and one of the most important things that I've come that's been made me successful and have really been had a big impact on my most important, like biggest days, are setting my day up powerfully. And so I've created a morning journaling process for people. And, you know, my book that just came out called Inspired Mornings is all about creating your morning powerfully with intention and inspiration. And it's kind of like a daily planner, but it also it has the emphasis of making a difference with other people in your life. Not just what am I going to create? What am I going to do? What am I going to have? But like, what's my actual intention? Am I going to be happy while I'm doing this, or I'm going to be a grumpy, you know, angry old fart, you know, and still accomplish my goal? So this really helps people set up their mind in a structured way so they actually achieve what they're actually out to get in their life. So
it's good to start. You know, it's one thing to have kind of ambiguous, let's do this and let's do that. But when you can wake up and have that fresh start every morning and kind of get pointed in the right direction, and hopefully that'll carry on through the rest of the day. So one more time with the name of the book, and then we want to hear, you know, if you've got social media or other ways. I know you do some speaking engagements where people can come out and see you.
Yeah, so the book is The Inspired Mornings Journal. You can get on Amazon, and you can go to inspiredmorningsjournal.com, and that'll take you right to it. My website, or people can follow me on Instagram at The Rubber Chicken Guy.
Okay. So I know because the shaman in Ecuador had rubber chickens, and so he has passed that rubbery chicken style torch right to you. Is that really just kind of like an icebreaker, right?
It's an icebreaker, and I've had people meet celebrities because of these rubber chickens. People land their dream jobs. People get back to dating, single moms.
These are magical chickens.
These are magical little chickens. People look at them, and it's a physical reminder in their life, oh, I need to do that. And then they do it, and that's when the magic shows up. They get out of their head, and they get into action in their life, and they start having their dreams come true.
He's an author. He is also the rubber chicken guy. He is making positive changes and helping you do the same from your morning on. And so, Brad, give the website, if you've got a website where people can see, you know, some of your events or places where you're going to be appearing or speaking, or how they can get a hold of you directly.
Yeah, directly. So they can go to inspiredmorningsjournal.com. That will redirect you to my website, and you can find, you know, my speaking events there. You can contact me there. And, you know, I'm on Instagram and Facebook too, you know, the Rubber Chicken Guy and Brad Finkeldei. And you guys, BradFinkeldei.
Nice. Oh, Brad, thanks so much. You're making a positive difference. Not everybody out there is doing that. You are definitely doing that. Hopefully that has helped some people here today on WGN. Quick break. We're going to come back and then send it to news. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN. Do you have like a favorite band or any kind of music that you're loving these days to use for the bumper?
Oh, what kind of music? Oh, let's see. What do you like? Want to pick a song?
Whatever kind of speaks to the moment you feel would be a great lead-in.
Choose one of the Walking Dead intro songs.
Oh, get out of town, the Walking Dead intro songs. Good.
He's Lord, like, the Walking Dead does not define me.
Here, let me get you a song here. Hold on. Let me get it. I'll pull it up here. I'll pull you up a song. See, which one do I, my top rated playlist. Okay, let's see what my play. that's an old playlist.
Some Merle Haggard or something?
Oh my God, here you go, right here. How about this one? Flooding Down in Texas, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, that's a classic.
It is a good one. Hey guys, this is Michael Rooker, and you're on the road with Dane at WGN.
WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and in studio is one of the hottest actors on this or any planet, whether he's saving the galaxy or battling post-apocalyptic cannibals. He is doing it in style. So great to have the one and only Michael Rooker in studio. Welcome to WGN.
Right on, man. Good to be here.
You know, you have connections with Chicago. Come back. You've been here on a number of occasions. Went to school here, right? You've played some Chicago sports villains in the Eight Men Out. And the last, I think it was maybe the time before last, you have appreciated some of our local cuisine, and you needed ribs.
Oh, I do that every time.
I actually got you some ribs. We had to wake up Bub City, which is a great place, at 8 in the morning. I called them, I said, Michael Rooker needs ribs. And they're like, well, we're not open until noon. I said, well, when the man needs ribs.
You got ribs.
He needs ribs.
You got ribs. Yep. I love it.
So when you're in Chicago and you get a chance to spend a few days here, I know you see some friends, you make the rounds, you've been here to WGN a number of times. Like, where do you eat? What do you like to get out and try?
I like going for ribs, and I do like them, and I appreciate a good beef. So I go over to Mr. Beef's, and then other than that.
So those are our Chicago delicacies?
I'm good.
Okay.
I get enough to last me 2 or 3 days, and that's it.
All right.
Well, that's all I eat.
Well, you're here. The public demands that you're here sharing some of the things that you've done in the past, you know, on the acting side, some of the most iconic and memorable. And I think that's it. So whether the movie was a huge, huge hit, the roles are so memorable. And is that your choice? And some of the interesting stories on how you got some of the roles, is that it? Or is it something that you're doing to take sometimes and oftentimes, right, you take these kind of flawed characters, even bad guys, and make them not only memorable, but oftentimes lovable?
Well, we're all kind of flawed, aren't we?
Sure.
In some ways, different ways and different to different extents. So sometimes the films, the movies, they highlight that kind of stuff. So they try to make it even more of a flaw. So, you know, and they bring it out at a very dramatic time. Or maybe, you know, right off the bat, the guy's a schmuck, or he's not right, or something's wrong with him, and he redeems himself later on. Or, you know, like Merle Dixon in The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I mean, you've got that range, whether it is characters like that, or whether it's, you know, Roddy Burns in Days of Thunder. Mm-hmm. And then Yondu, who started out, you thought of him as a bad guy, as one of those guys that was chasing, you know, some of the stars of the movie. But in the end, like, so super lovable that by the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I got to tell you this, Michael, my wife cried, like, at the end when you passed away, mm-hmm. you know, that you were able to take this guy who had, you know, was kind of one of those antagonists in the movies and make him where people cry when he dies.
You know what? It's all James Gunn's fault. He wrote it. He's the one that crafted it and made it what it was. You know, he built that role up. It was beautiful. I mean, the first time around was great, and then we just added on to it. You know, it was a beautiful a second movie.
I read a little bit about some of the improvisations that happen where they allow some of the actors, and you've got a lot of people in there with some great personalities and kind of improvisational. And the one scene, and we still do it, you know, in our family and friends, is that, you know, when you're in the store and you do the boop, boop, beep, bop, like you change that. I read somewhere that it was just going to be kind of a bland, like, blah, blah, but then you improvised and made it.
We do a little bit of improvisational stuff, but most of it's James Gunn yelling at us from behind the camera. Rooker, now say this. Now do it this way, and oh no, now do it this way. You know, that kind of stuff. He's that kind of director.
It's kind of
fun to hear him in the background screaming at you, and he gives you these ideas. And you just flow, you just go with it.
Well, whether it's interviews like this or all the fans, like you're going to be meeting at Wizard World Chicago too, where they come out, does it validate? Yes. So for the next movie, you've got to say, like, hey, I know you said maybe this wasn't the best idea, but, you know, the public has spoken, and it's great.
You know what? You do add, you know, I think it was outcry in the first one that I didn't have the full fin.
People love the full fin.
No, in the second one, I had the full fin.
Yeah.
And the way we got into the full fin was really cool. You know, but now I have the full fin, you know.
The prototype.
Yeah, the prototype.
As it was called. Now, it is the world of fantasy, so anything can happen. We don't have to. You could either come back in the next movie, the inevitable next movie, as a flashback, as maybe a kind of an Obi-Wan Kenobi kind of dream advisor.
We're taking notes from everyone.
Yep, so dream advisor.
This is good.
Like Obi-Wan stuff.
Okay.
Or you look at, you know, Groot died and then baby Groot. Maybe a little piece of, maybe the fin breaks off and grows a new Yondu.
I've never heard that one yet. So this is good.
So people are going to be hearing a lot. And you are one of those guys that is known for so many different things that really resonate with, you know, the fans in kind of that fantasy world, you know, with Walking Dead and things. It reminds me of, do you have to do a bunch of costume? Are you like Cher, you know, on her tour? She does all these costume changes where you have to come out and you've got to be Merle and then you've got to come out and be Yondu. Or do you just be you, right? You just...
No, you just... Yeah, I don't know anyone that dresses as their characters, but... Yeah, you just wear your own stuff, you know.
And what is some of the things that people say? I know people are going to be excited, and we'll hear a little bit about the schedule coming up this weekend where people are going to get a chance to be up close and personal with you. It's one of the things that we've seen is that you love your fans, and you love that feedback. You love to interact with them. You give them, you know, advice and input.
I do. And I really have gotten into the cosplayers. I love seeing the cosplayers come up and looking at their stuff and how much energy and effort they put into it and how much money it costs. Sometimes they make it themselves, but sometimes they have to buy the materials.
Right.
You know, so if you're buying a real leather, it's going to cost you. If you're buying a fake leather, it looks like a Yondu duster, but, you know, they make this stuff themselves.
Do you ever wonder, you know, and I get it, you know, for the events and people are going to showcase, but the people maybe have taken it too far. Have you said, because you have so many different diverse interests in lives and projects and things like that, you say, like, Yondu loves you, but maybe take it down a notch if it's hurting your ability to keep a job where you can't be blue.
No. No way. I want him to stay blue all the time and walk the streets. You can't get a job. You might as well be Yondu.
Now, here's the other thing, too, is when you get to the point where you are, I'm sure there's a lot of different, you know, offers and opportunities coming in. Are there things that you've wanted to do? I saw that you've done, and this fits in with Wizard World, is on the gaming side. You've participated in creating some of those games and the voicing. Are there things like that you really enjoy or things you'd like to do?
Well, I do enjoy gaming. I love making the games. I've worked a lot with Treyarch and the Black Ops series, so... I did a nice, really very popular map pack for Black Ops 1 called Call of the Dead, where we play ourselves, me, Danny Trejo, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Robert Englund, we all play ourselves, George Romero. That's a great game. So it's a good zombie killing game. And then I did the Black Ops 2, I was a playable character, Mike Harper. So, looks just like me, but with a tan.
Well, it's good to get some vitamin D in there now and then. Well, it's great to see you. It's great to have you here in Chicago. It's awesome, I'm sure, for you to get some of that feedback, not only the, you know, the support and the praise for things that you're doing. I'm sure that feels good, but also some of those suggestions. What is it that fans have fans asked you to do anything that you said, hey, I never considered that, but that sounds like a pretty good idea?
They usually don't. They usually don't ask me to. They come up with ideas and stuff like that.
Like, you got
to
do this, or this would be perfect, or you've got to meet my brother. He's crazy, you know, or something like that.
There's all sorts of stuff. I don't usually like to do video or audio stuff, you know. But I get a lot of requests to like say hey to my mom. Would you say hello to my mom? You know, but I generally say hi.
Well, it's great. People are going to have the opportunity not only to do what they've done over the years many, many times, see you on the big screen in some of their favorite movies, their favorite games, but see you in person here at Wizard World Chicago. So before we let you go, you know, your social media, I know you're pretty active. I think it's Rooker Online is the social media. Or
Michael underscore Rooker is my Instagram, and I do a lot of that.
And then what are you going to be doing at Wizard World so people see you this weekend?
We're going to be hanging out there. I have to fly out, so get in there early and come see me.
Definitely. If you see him on the marquee, duck in, check it out and see one of your absolute favorites, one of the very best in the business, Michael Rooker. Thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for being in Chicago. Thanks for loving ribs and beefs. And thanks for being on WGN today.
Thanks for promoting our show this weekend. It's a very popular one, and we've been here every year now. Wizard World's been here for how many years? Like 5 years or more?
I would say somewhere around the 5 years. Yeah, so and it's the kind of thing that the popularity grows and grows. Yeah. You're onto something for sure.
Yeah.
And you're definitely one of the big stars, the main attractions for people to enjoy out there at Wizard World. So thank you again, Michael.
Thank you.
What was your first car? You rode a lot of bikes, obviously, but maybe traveling to competitions. What was the first car that you ever had?
You mean driving?
Yeah.
A green Beetle Volkswagen.
What?
Yeah.
So a guy that's like 6'5" and
you
had a Beetle.
The guy took out the front seat and used to sit in the back seat. It was a small car, but I just loved the Volkswagen. It was great. Hi, this is Lou Ferrigno. You're on the road with Dane, WGN Radio. Keep listening because you wouldn't like me when I get angry.
Beat my bones against the wall, staring down an empty hall.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, and in studio, honored to have bodybuilding legend, Mr. America, Mr. Universe, actor, icon, the Hulk himself, an inspirational force for fitness, the one and only Lou Ferrigno. Lou, welcome to WGN.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I think the world is going to be a little bit better as you get into Wizard World over here in Chicago. Talk a little bit about it. Obviously, people know you from the Hulk, and that's kind of the focus of the convention. But I'm sure you get fans from, you know, all other aspects from your bodybuilding days that come to see you.
Well, it's a great pop culture. You got a huge fan base. They come from all over. Fans of bodybuilding, fans of us, you know, for comic books, and families of three different generations. Because we have a photo up there. They have Q&A. But the greatest part about it, the fact that interacting with the fans, they get excited, they walk away with a smile on their face.
So you're bringing people smiles. You've also brought that message of fitness as you focused on the things that you were doing in your life, in your career, trying to be great. But you did it in such a public format, right? Bodybuilding at a time when it was kind of just bursting onto the scene. And then, of course, you know, whenever you're taking that role, that responsibility of an iconic cartoon character, comic book hero, you know, you're going to get that. We mentioned inspirational force, and I got to tell you, I was one of those kids, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, but it's great to say, is it was appointment television at a time when there wasn't a million channels out there. The Hulk was like our favorite show, like all of us.
Channel 247.
Yeah, right. There wasn't a ton, and so you had a lot of people that did that, but there was a lot of television shows we didn't like, but we absolutely loved The Hulk. Now, when you got it, you knew that you wanted to get into acting. You knew that this was an opportunity where you could let your physique and your body kind of lead the way into the path of an expanding career. But did you have any idea the impact that it was going to have on people?
No, I was hoping to get picked up as a series, but I had no idea that 40-some years later, now the biggest iconic Marvel hero. And now we have conventions. We have mecha movies. And you got all the A-list actors doing these films, like The Ventures and X-Men, all the characters. But you got to remember, when I began The Hulk, I was a pioneer. Because at the time, Captain America and Spider-Man failed as a TV series, so The Hulk became successful. So it basically laid the groundwork.
Well, you mentioned that because it isn't the kind of thing, you look at it now, those films completely dependent on like CGI, special effects, all the things that they can do. But you had to do this as a person. I got to think, like right now on the planet, and you can add to this, there wasn't another person that could have played that role. No. Like physically, that could, because you still, even though it was a television show, you had to really be amazingly impressive as The Hulk.
Well, it's the perfect time and place because I was training for the Mr. Olympia competition in 1977, and the audition happened 6 weeks before I was going to compete, so I had to make the decision to give up bodybuilding to make this pilot, because I trained a whole year to win this competition, and the rest is history. It was the perfect time and place, and you couldn't pick a better time.
Well, you talk about some of the television stuff that you did, and it wasn't a natural transition. Now there are a lot of different ways for people to kind of get famous, a lot of avenues on the television side and things like that. The Hulk, not a lot of jokes written into the script of The Hulk, I don't think, but you know, you mentioned, I read somewhere, you know, Bill Bixby, one of our great television actors, and was a mentor for you. And not only did you have to bring the physical end of the Hulk into it, but you had to build in, there were a lot of those scenes where you built in either emotion or fear or empathy or some of those things. Did you feel like you really had to act? Obviously, you had to be green and big and impressive and imposing, but were you working on your acting chops?
Well, it came naturally to me because it's called pantomime. I mean, acting without speaking, I was able to show the sensitivity for the character. And they always said to me, do your own thing, because it came natural to me. But I've learned a lot about acting after I was filming the series, because a lot of time when you take acting lessons, it's important to learn about pantomime, because pantomime, that's acting without speaking,
right,
and showing the emotion. If you have no feelings, you can't show the emotions, you're not a good actor. So basically, it was a great training platform for me.
I think it was so important to the role and the success of the role, having people connect. I mentioned not a lot of jokes written into the Hulk script, probably, but one of our family's favorite shows was King of Queens,
yeah.
And that allowed you to really expand. Now, you're a funny guy. You got a great sense of humor. Did you feel that this would be a great way for you to show that to America, or was it just something that kind of, hey, I really like this?
Well, when they first mentioned about it to me, I said to myself, I'm playing myself. I said, why not give it a shot? Because... I thought I'm going to kind of limit typecast me, but the truth is that it's so well received that I did the movie called I Love You, Man, and that taken to the next level because, you know, you use your own personality. So I'm actually playing Lou Ferrigno besides the other acting role, and it works beautifully for comedy.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff, and it's wonderful to see that kind of thing happen. But I think that common thing is the inspiration out there, not only for kids to get fit, for kids to enjoy some of their favorite superheroes. You mentioned the Avengers. It's great to see that hold up and you be a part of some of those and be revered with some of those films that are some of the biggest hits out there. Now, on the inspirational side, and this was another thing that went through it, is the Presidential Council for Fitness. People can come down on whatever side they want on the politics side. I think one thing we all agree on is that that the kids are important, that health is important. It's so cool to see you because you are, you know, our fitness icon here in the United States, getting involved to try to take all those kind of lessons and benefits that you learned and bring them to the next generation when we need it most.
Exactly. That's why I like to be the head of it because hopefully it I'll be appointed by Trump, but I just know that there's too many kids out there. We have so much obesity here in America, and they need to educate these people, put them on the right direction to improve their health. Because we have a very lazy country, so many kids, so many people playing video games. But take some of that time, exercise, and sitting on the damn couch for hours playing video games and eating something that's unhealthy, like potato chip, hot dog, or fattening food.
Now, do you think because of some of the stuff that you've done, obviously, with that platform, you've got just, you know, a great ability to affect some change. People think of the weightlifting side of it, but the nutrition side is so important too, right?
Oh, yeah. Nutrition is like 75%, so you have to educate them as well as nutrition-wise. A lot of times, it also depends on the environment they come from. So that's why, basically, if I educate them properly, they have a better understanding that you're getting a piece of paper how to eat. It's all about dealing with your own personal issue.
I remember as a kid when they first instituted the Presidential Fitness Council, and it was so important for the listeners. It's the kind of thing that allows you, you know, we all enjoy gym class. It's fun to get out there and play games with your friends, but it sets goals. It kind of has aspirations in there. There's like, you know, some patch. I don't know what you'll do if you get to do it. I don't know what you'll do as far as some of the rewards, but it was neat because it set some goals out there nationally for people to go for.
Uh-huh. And it is important because life is all about your health. It's all about combining the mind and the body together because if you haven't got your health, you have nothing.
Yeah, and people are going to see you here at Wizard World in Chicago, but also, too, keeping on the bodybuilding side, I will say that you, Arnold Schwarzenegger, a handful of people really brought it as a sport to the forefront through pumping iron and some of those. I mean, I got the chance to interview Jack LaLanne, who is one of those pioneers just in the thought process of weightlifting and that kind of stuff, and you took it to kind of a sport and a phenomenon, and you're continuing that, and you're going to keep some of those events going. You've got one, the Lou Ferrigno Legacy event. Talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's called the Ferrigno Legacy. It's in Palm Springs. It's a big bodybuilding competition. The IFBB NPC, it's the classic, the physique, the bikini, and the fitness. Last year, we had over 500 competitors. But this year, we're going to have the expo called Flexpo. The whole convention center will have over 300 booths that have to do with anti-aging, supplement, work training, and everything. And it can be very entertaining. But the beauty about it, the fact that in the fitness industry now, we're talking about $3 billion a year when you think about equipment, about supplements. Everybody now wants to get on stage. We have different age groups. Like if you're 55, you're in good shape, why not compete? Like you're 65. So there's no limits.
Wow. Okay, so the full scope, bringing everything in from inspiring the kids all the way to the older generations, getting everybody involved. You've got the entertainment side. You've got the fitness side. You've got the supplements, the nutrition side, and all that. The Ferrigno Lexi, that's coming up in, is it Palm Beach that is coming up in November?
Palm Spring, November 18, 19. And when you think about 40-some years ago, they were just laughing at me when I talked about going to acting, like even back Arnold back then, the two of us, we did the movie Pumping Iron. So basically, we were probably the only two guys that have not gotten into football, pro football, because there was no money in bodybuilding. But because of our passion, my passion, I wanted to be an actor. So we were able to succeed because we were always stereotyped as the muscle-bound freak. That's the way we looked. But all that has changed now, because I was the first one to do the Incredible Hulk. And at the time when I was on TV, people didn't believe the body was real. They thought it was like Bill Bixby with a jumpsuit pump.
But to take that, to push those envelopes and to change like all of the things that are going and to create really a career that didn't exist, right? No, you were kind of pioneers and trendsetters.
But the most important thing is my passion. When you're passionate about something, embrace it, because you can't listen to the naysayers saying, like when I was young growing up as a kid, I was always condemned for working out. I would talk about bodybuilding, barbells and dumbbells, and everybody made fun of me because people would say to my father, what's wrong with your son? All he talks about is weightlifting and working out. And they just laughed. But if I didn't embrace my passion, I wouldn't be who I am today.
Nope. An inspirational force that's getting out there and doing all sorts of things here at Wizard World in Chicago now and all around the country. For this show, we talk about kind of transformational travel. If you get to be for the President's Council, if you lead that, you know, for children nationwide, you'll travel all over. I'm sure through your career with the competition, certainly the acting and the movies, you've seen the country. Where are some places that you, you know, a kid from the East Coast gets to travel the country? Mm-hmm. Where are some of your favorite places where you get out there and it's unexpected? Maybe you got some things you didn't expect from the people.
Well, especially being home in California, because a lot of time I ride a bicycle on the beach every day, and you have no idea what I encounter on the beach. I mean, people see me riding the bicycle.
That's pretty great, though.
Yeah, it is. Like what bothers me is that every quarter of a mile, I smell marijuana. People laying on the beach, smoking a joint, not exercising, and just laying there being lazy. But the ones who do exercise on the bicycle path, working out, so that's what I'm talking about. We have to get more of these people, these lazy people, get them off their butt and get exercise.
Get them motivated, get them healthy, follow in your footsteps, and, of course, follow you to Wizard World. Well, Lou, before we let you go, talk if you've got any social media so people can follow all your adventures, a website where people can get involved and find out about
FerignoFit.com.
FerignoFit.com.
You got it.
All right, see him here in Chicago. See him all over the place and all around the country in schools, hopefully coming soon. The one and only Lou Ferrigno. Thanks for being on WGN today.
On the Road with Dane on WGN.
One more ride.
WGN on the road with Dane live here, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Lise, it looks as though it's a little cloudy now. Maybe some rain is coming. I know we don't have a lot of rain in the forecast. We've had kind of this unbroken streak of really nice days for the days that we've at least been in here. Can't say for the ones where we haven't, but it's always great to get out there and enjoy cars, no matter whether it's the cruise nights, the car shows all around the country, all around Chicagoland, but also here in the Chicagoland area. We have one of the greatest collection, a one-stop shop, over 400 cars, muscle cars, classic cars, legendary cars from some of your favorite movies. As well. And some of the ones that people are sending in, some of their dream cars, I'm sure some of those are probably up there. We'll mention a couple right now. From the 239 Maserati, from 847 is a 1951 Packard 400. 312 sent in the 1972 GTO with the black top. And the first car was a Ford Maverick. Dream car was a 65 Ford Mustang. That coming from the 217, 312-981-7200. You can send in your first car, favorite car, or dream car, and be in the running. Lisa's going to pick out the bona fide ride of the show before the end of the program as well. On the line with us, he is the man behind so many people's dream cars up there 364 days a year at the Volo Auto Museum. Brian Graham's on the line. Brian, welcome to WGN.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Brian, I don't know what it is. You know, people who love cars, and you know, America has a love affair with the automobile. You know that your personal family has had a love affair with hundreds of some of the greatest, craziest, most amazing cars out there. Give the listeners a little bit. You guys are, you know, right in the Chicagoland area. Everybody in our listening audience has the ability to get out there and see. I think you're open, you know, almost every day of the year. But talk about how it all started for the Graham family up there in Volo.
Well, like you said, you know, America loves their cars, and it was actually my dad's hobby. My grandfather was a junker. He would go to estate sales, garage sales, and they had a little resale shop. And my dad was, him and his brother were into cars, and on their own time, they would tinker with them. And their tinkering turned into a hobby, turned into a museum, turned into a car dealer, and just kept evolving from there. And now it's multi-generational, so...
So it started out kind of as like your own personal family story of that great show on the History Channel, you know, Pickers, you know, where people have cars that they love. But the thing I think that the difference is that you have not just cars that you're enjoying. This isn't just, you know, a person who has the means to have some favorite cars in a giant garage or just a bunch of cars. But these are all museum quality, right? These are the kind of things that you can get up there, you can see and experience.
Yeah, we've got about 300 production cars that are you know, vintage classics that are for sale. And we sell about anywhere from 60 to 90 cars every month. So those cars are always turning over and are always a different display. And then we've got about another 100 museum pieces that are strictly unique specialty cars that are not your standard production cars that we have on display in the museum. Celebrity cars, cars of the, you know, the rich and famous, TV and movie cars, anything with a unique background to it is on display. And then it goes beyond that. There's scooters, motorcycles, snowmobiles. I mean, we even got a motorized armchair. So a little bit of everything, something for everyone.
Well, you're the guy for the listeners to let them know we're talking with Brian Grahams. He is he's the kind of the visionary person behind currently the auto museum there and curates a lot of the different things that are going on. So what is it that you're looking for when you get those? And talk a little bit about some of the, it's one thing to have a celebrity car, you know, something that was owned by somebody famous. It's great to get to see what it is that they rode around in. But describe a couple of the cars that people may know of, either from TV or films, that you guys have on site.
Well, we've been, over the years, we've been refining our TV and movie car collection to get the most iconic, most popular, most recognizable, you know, the Munster coach and the Dragula coffin car. We've got three Batmobiles currently, the TV series, the Michael Keaton 89 Batmobile.
What?
And the Tumbler are all, you know, here on display.
Three Batmobiles?
The Ghostbusters car, the wow. Back to the Future, Star Wars Land Speeder. We even have a one-of-one vehicle from the original Alien movie. I mean, just a very wide variety, you know, Fast and Furious, Transformers, you know, so they span multi-generational, which is, you know, talking about the Batmobiles is great because, like, Dad will come in with his son and they'll both be here to look at the Batmobile, but they're both picturing a different Batmobile.
Right. It's changed, but you guys have been able to kind of change and not do the either or thing, but do the and thing, right? As some of those iconic franchises move into their current states, you're able to represent the vehicles there as well. You kind of bring it up is that one of the cool things about cars is that whether it's a cruise night, you know, you've got people that are, you know, older people that love cars, have that kind of access and knowledge of some of the vintage stuff. And you've got kids, too, it doesn't really have an age group that it appeals to. And you mentioned some of those, you know, things that might appeal to kids. This is really, it's more than just a, you know, because you think of it, a giant warehouse of cars that you can walk up and down and see. But you've created an environment that is fun for the whole family, right? You've built in things that would be of interest for kids. There's a lot of entertainment there.
Yeah, we, you know, don't stop at cars. We got a lot of mechanical marvels here. You know, the vintage arcades, the kiddie rides from the 50s and 60s, just a lot of unique things. The old jukeboxes, the old vending machines, you know, the Coca-Cola and Pepsi vending machines, automotive memorabilia, you know, from the 16-foot-tall Pep Boys statue from the 30s to, you know, the gas pumps of the 40s and 50s. So just a lot of different things. And we don't group everything together because we like to keep it interesting. When you're walking through the place, you don't know what's around the next corner. You know, we don't have just like a room full of arcades and a room full of cars and a room full of motorcycles. It's scattered throughout. So as you're walking through, you don't get bored. You know, you're seeing new things, you know, not lined up like soldiers.
You know, I kind of like that. You look at a museum, but it's kind of got that sort of fresh thing where it's more of an, you know, exploratory mission, right? You're kind of getting in there and experiencing things and then running into some old favorites, some things you know and love from television or from your childhood or even just cars that you really appreciated and they're kind of on your dream list as well. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back with Brian Grahams from the Volo Auto Museum. And we're going to talk about some of the, you're always on it, right? You're always out there looking for those next great cars. There was in the news that you've got one of a new car that is going to be, I think, a very interesting new exhibit. We'll talk about it when we come back from this break. Stay tuned. Here it is on the road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Mike Joy from NASCAR on Fox. You're on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN on the road with Dane live here, Allstate Showcase Studio, and so many great ways to see cars all around the Chicagoland area. Cruise nights, car shows, they are happening. A place that has got the biggest conversion of the best cars ever is right in our midst here in Volo, the Volo Auto Museum. On the line is the man behind the museum, Brian Grams. Brian, welcome back to WGN.
Well, thanks for having me back.
So this is really cool. So you're always out there looking, curating those next things as new cars either become, you know, of prominence or of interest. And I mean, I saw it in the news. So describe the latest car that you have here. It's something that people love limos for sure. And they love, you know, cars that relate to people in the public eye. You've got one of the biggest.
Yeah, the car that we have is a 1988 Cadillac limousine, and it's a Trump edition. Back in 87, Trump and Cadillac got together to build these executive limos. You know, they're supposed to be the best of the best. Gold-plated, I mean, fax machines, safe, three telephones, wet bar, dry bar, TV, raised roof. I mean, just completely the most luxurious, you know, Cadillac that you could possibly think of. They plan to produce, you know, multiple of these cars, and Trump himself was committed to buy 50 of them. After the first two were built, they scrapped the project, and only the two exist, and we've got one of them.
Wow. Okay, so it's got all the accoutrements for, the, you know, where you have luxury, right? You need that. You want comfort in your limousine. I mean, that's kind of in the team photo of needs when you get one of those cars. But then you have some of the most advanced electronics of the age, right? The fax machine, you know, and you've probably got, there's probably a giant phone in there, something like that.
Three of them, and a paper shredder, and everything that you could think of is gold plated. Even the keys to the car are gold plated.
Wow, my gosh, wow! So that's the kind of thing. Only two of those on the whole planet, as there are with so many of these different iconic cars that you have up in Volo. So talk a little bit about how people can get to you, where you're located exactly, you know, tickets, and the kind of things people can do so they can make the most out of their visit to Volo.
Yeah, well, the best thing to do is go to our website. All the information is on there. Our hours are open 7 days a week, 10 to 5. We're located just west of Great America, about 15 miles. There's a metro station just a couple miles from us with the cab service back and forth. So we're very easy to get to. And it takes, you know, depending on traffic, 45 minutes to an hour from the city to drive.
And it's the kind of thing you can spend the entire day. There's so many cars to see. You've got food. You've got entertainment. It's great for the whole family. So one more time, Brian, with the website.
It's volocars.com. And they can also find us, you know, social media, Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff as well.
Volocars.com. Brian Graham's been there. His entire family's been doing this for so many years, and we're blessed because of it. So thanks, Brian, for what you're doing, and thanks for sharing it on WGN today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Wow, we gotta get up there. Lisa, have you ever been up to the Volo Auto Museum?
I have not.
See, right? You gotta get up there. You can see all the different cars. Maybe the Mystery Machine. I know Mater from Cars is there. Not that you would only be interested in the animated cartoon cars, but there's some for everybody.
I'm really interested. I want to know if they have the Mirthmobile from Wayne's World.
Oh, I don't know if they have. I think that's at the Hollywood Casino.
Oh.
Yep. So before we go
this
to the before we go to the break, let's announce our bona fide ride of the show, where people have sent in their first car, their favorite car, or their dream car. We've got a really cool one this week.
Yes, Rosie with her Maserati or her dream Maserati.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say no to that.
Congratulations to Rosie, and
right up there with the Trump limo.
Right. No one has sent that one in. Now that they know it exists, they definitely will do that. And they've got a $25 gift certificate to Bona Beef for being the bona fide ride of the show. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we actually have something else, too. So we'll do like the, what do you want to do, Lisa? Like the fifth caller. We've got two tickets to tomorrow's NASCAR Infinity Race at Road America. And if, let's say, the seventh caller, we'll go to break. When we come back, we'll announce that as well. Plus, wrap it up and send it to the beat. So it's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
A whole other world.
The dating conversation.
The real estate conversation.
The cooking conversation.
New music, old friends. Chicago's conversation starts on WGN Radio.
And goes everywhere you are with WGN Plus.
Start your journey Search and download the WGN Plus app.
And we are back, 720 WGN, on the road with Dane. Here, I want to thank everybody that listened to the show. Thanks to everybody who participated in the program as well. So many great things going on. We got Rosie with her Maserati, and she can go ahead and look forward to her gift certificate. So at least were you able to pick? Okay, Chris is going to be going out to the Johnsonville 180 at Road America, so we'll have those tickets for him as well. And that race is going on tomorrow, just 2 hours away, and they'll be at Will Call Forum, but we'll talk to him a little bit on the phone as well. I want to get Harry in here for a second. I know the guys from the Beat are going to be on and just talk a little bit of upcoming big box office boxing. It isn't every day that you're setting all of the betting records when it comes to boxing, and this is one of those fights. I mean, it's a matchup that has not been made throughout the ages, maybe been, you know, made throughout maybe curiosity of styles. People always wonder, hey, you know, the UFC guys, they're pretty tough. Could they take some of the boxers? Where you take, you know, one of the loudest, biggest personalities, size-wise, I think they're pretty similar, and you go up against historically the best, maybe the best boxer of all time. You can debate all that stuff. So Harry, what do you think? Is boxing interesting to you, or is it, I mean, this is an interesting fight to everybody.
This is an interesting fight to me. I mean, I grew up on Ali, and you know, Mike Tyson was somebody that you had to watch. But tonight, a fight like this, you haven't seen till that, you know, since that couple down the street that drinks a little too much vino got at it the other night. I think Mayweather's going to kill him.
You'd think so, right?
Right. I think he's just going to crush him. He's going to kill him. But you're right. It's breaking every record. It's, you know, it's just the stats are unbelievable how much money they're going to make on this fight, which means that if McGregor won, then the next one they could charge like $150.
You know, right. The showman out there, and of course, he is part of the money team, is that maybe this is the time to lose. I don't know. Floyd Mayweather, that's the thing he loves most is his undefeated record. So we'll see. And everybody who buys the fight, when this is Harry said, when Mayweather wins easily, we'll all just know that we were suckers and should have known in advance that
they expect to make over $5 million on just the pay-per-view.
Wow.